from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and this hour we're talking with filmmakers whose work is appearing at the Sundance Film Festival, which starts this week in Park City, Utah. And for this half hour, director David Weissman, his film We Were Here, Voices from the AIDS Years in San Francisco. It features five people, four men and one woman, describing life during the early years of the AIDS epidemic in San Francisco, how the joy of gay liberation of the late 70s kind of morphed into fear, and then death and unimaginable loss, and then anger, political organizing with groups like ACT UP, and finally, hope from some of the new treatments that are available now. And the director of We Were Here, David Weissman, is with us. Good to have you.
Hi, Scott. Nice to see you.
We're going to hear some clips from the film in just a minute, but first I want to ask you, what did you want to accomplish with this film? Why was it important, do you think, to make this documentary?
Well, I think enough time has passed that people who lived through that period of time are realizing that there's a lot of healing that needs to be done. That there has been a kind of a silence and almost a forgetfulness around the AIDS epidemic and what actually happened here in San Francisco. And I think that there's been, in the last couple of years, an increasing interest among younger people, particularly younger gay men, who just realize that they don't know anything about what happened in that era. So it just seems like it's in the air that this is the right time to revisit this history.
You know, when I first heard about the film, I thought, hasn't this been done? And it's kind of surprising because it hasn't been. And for all the reasons you say, I mean, in some part of the reason is a lot of the people who lived it are gone.
Well, I don't think it's – I mean, I think that's certainly part of it. But I think that for those of us who did live through that era with all of its intensity, there was such a kind of a sense of relief as the dying slowed down and people wanted to reestablish their lives and to move forward. And I think this is true with tragedies of all sorts. And I have certainly, as someone who has Holocaust in my family background, I'm aware of how that experience was not spoken about in a personal way for many, many years, just because it was too difficult to find language for it and people didn't know how to ask questions. But so I do think that, again, the passage of time is enabling something that really it's been too early to do.
People are more ready to hear it now.
Yes.
And talk about it now.
Yeah.
There are five people, as I said, four men and one woman who were profiled. How did you go about picking them, and what were you looking for in terms of the voices you wanted to have in this documentary?
Well, I knew from the beginning that audiences would have some degree of trepidation about seeing a film like this, so I knew that the people that would be on screen ultimately would have to be incredibly inviting.
What would the trepidation be about?
Well, I think that it's scary to go see a movie about a subject matter that you think is just going to be a sad movie, and you know, it's in some ways it is an AIDS documentary. So I knew that I needed the audience to fall in love with the people on screen in the first couple of minutes and to feel safe to go on this journey with them. And I wanted people who were able to really emotionally be open and reflect on those years, ideally in ways that they maybe hadn't done before. And people who reflected both a very intimate personal story and yet cumulatively reflected a much larger kind of a sense of the historical moment.
I want to play a clip from the film now, and this is one of the people who is profiled. His name is Paul Boenberg, and we're going to play Howard Gelmer going to play our second clip there. This is Paul describing what it was like to live in the community, to live in the Castro, with so many people falling ill to the disease.
Within a mile of epicenter of Castro and Market, large numbers of people who died, not just your friends who died, but, you know, the people you didn't know, the friend of the friend. You know, you'd go get a coffee, and the person who used to give you coffees died. You would, you know, whatever it was, your banker, your mailman, your all that, mass death, to the point where you, to some degree, would stop asking if people weren't around where they were, unless you wanted to get into a discussion of them being dead or them being sick.
Again, that's Paul Boenberg, one of the five people profiled in David Weissman's film, We Were Here. And I remember those years. That was the year that I came to San Francisco, 1981, you know, right in the early 80s, David. And one of the things that's so striking in the film, and of course it brings back a lot of memories, is you see the photos of these young men who were in the prime of life, and then you see them gradually as they become sicker. And, you know, they're walking around the neighborhood, and they look cadaverous in some cases, very, very ill. What was it like for you as the filmmaker to sit, because you lived through that as well, to sit through and listen to these stories of these folks?
Well, the interviews were very powerful, I think, for both people, for both me and the interviewees, because they were not really conventional interviews and because we had both experienced the same thing. So the interviews were pretty intense. Unfortunately, I only wound up doing nine for the five that were in the film because we found what we needed. It was an interesting experience revisiting so many aspects of this because it just put me through my own journey of questioning my own memories of those years and putting my own history into a different context.
Several of the people become, of course, very emotional on screen. And I'm just wondering, how hard was it for them to sit through these interviews? Did you have to take a lot of breaks as they, you know, recounted stories with their own partners or with their own health or with people that they knew, friends who had died and others? How hard was that?
You know, we sort of plowed through it. And I think again, it was a very rich experience for both the interviewees as well as for me. Daniel at one point said to me that it was the most listened to he'd ever felt in his life. And that made me feel really good. You know, the interviews were all, you know, around 3 hours long. We didn't, you know, we took breaks as one does when doing interviews, but we just sort of went through it. And I think people were very grateful to have the opportunity to be asked the questions that they were being asked, because it doesn't happen very often.
I want to play another clip from the film, and this is from the one woman that you profile. Her name is Eileen, and she was a nurse at San Francisco General Hospital, where so much of the care...
Actually, Eileen worked at Mount Zion first.
Oh, at Mount Zion first.
And then was with Quest Clinical Research.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. And she was very involved, of course, in dealing with AIDS patients in those early years. And let's hear just a clip of her describing what that was like.
From the beginning, I just couldn't stand the homophobia and the prejudice that was going on. And the fear. There was incredible fear, right? That these people were coming in and dying and nobody knew what it was and people get afraid. There were people who were afraid to go into rooms. And so I found myself going into the rooms. If you're not a family member, they wouldn't talk to you. So if somebody's partner was in there, the doctors might not explain to them what was going on. So I found myself talking to them.
Again, a clip from We Were Here. We're joined this hour by filmmaker David Weissman, and that film will screen this Saturday at the Sundance Film Festival in Utah. If you'd like to join us this hour to give your own experiences of living in San Francisco during that era, or if perhaps you've seen the film, you want to tell us your thoughts about that, give us a ring at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. David, what does it mean to have a film in the Sundance Film Festival?
Well, the day that the announcement comes out, your life changes fairly dramatically. It's very high profile, and you really have to like put together a team of people and prepare for it, which I really was not prepared to do. I kind of isolated myself to make the movie from the realities of the movie business, and I wasn't really quite prepared. And luckily, we've caught up.
Prepared for the onslaught.
There's a deluge of press interest, of industry interest, of decisions that have to be made, of strategizing that has to be done. You just all of a sudden become a very public commodity, and there's just a lot to be addressed. I've got a wonderful team of people working with me on this, and we're catching up.
And give us a sense of how hard is it to get a film accepted to Sundance? I mean, like, how many films get submitted and how many are shown?
I think within the documentary competition section, which is what I'm in this year, the United States documentary competition, I think there was something like 840 films submitted and 16 films were selected.
Wow. So very selective.
Yeah, it's pretty selective. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exciting. I mean, it's daunting because it's such a overwhelming experience to be there. It can be very stressful, but it's like super exciting. And it means a lot. When you tell people you're in Sundance, people really respond.
Yeah, they get it right away. And, yeah. Of course, a lot of filmmakers, Quentin Tarantino, for example, have been discovered at Sundance. What do you hope comes out of the festival other than more people seeing the film?
Well, there's – different films go in, I think, with different sets of objectives. I mean, the larger objective is, yes, I would like this film to be utilized in as many ways as it can possibly be utilized, and whether that will be through a conventional – distribution strategy, or whether it will be an unconventional strategy, I don't really know. But I mean, the idea is to maximize the visibility, hopefully the good reviews, the good word of mouth, and get the film out there as much as possible.
It's hard to believe, but it's been 30 years now since essentially 30 years since the epidemic began. What do you think people who are now coming of age, especially younger gay men and women who didn't live through it and didn't live through everything that preceded it, at least not as adults, you know, what do you think they missed?
Well, I mean, they missed both beauty and horror. I mean, both before and during the epidemic. I think part of what younger people and people who are outside of our community feel from the film is the extraordinary sense of community bondedness that happened and the community supportiveness that came through the epidemic, and also the community that was built in San Francisco in the 70s when the gay community here was really developing. And I think that for younger people, there has been a building fascination with the 70s just because it was very free and exuberant. And I think that that is evolving into a fascination with the 80s as to how those changes happened too.
It's interesting to see in the film how word spread, how people organized, you know, a flyer in a pharmacy window, community meetings. And you think now about how people get together. It's on Facebook or through other social media. Do you ever think or have you heard back from young people who say, wow, you know, it's amazing they did that without the technology that we have now or without the means that we have now? How might things have been different if they did have those things?
Both things are hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine that life was the way it was not that long ago and how one might have – or how things might have evolved differently under present circumstances. I mean, it's really – I mean, obviously the internet would have enabled all kinds of communication and organizing that isn't available now. But there was something about the human touch in that era. I mean, when, you know, people like Cleve Jones and Paul Boneberg and, you know, people that would put up these flyers and get word out without the benefit of the internet, and you'd get 5,000 people for a demonstration with 6 hours' notice. I mean, that was really a phenomenal time here in San Francisco in terms of people's sense of engagement.
David Weissman, his film is called We Were Here. It's screening at Sundance this weekend. And again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. Let's go to the phones now. Greg is on the line from Petaluma. Good morning.
Hi, David. This is Greg Mitchell from Petaluma.
Hi, Greg.
David and I go way back to the 70s. And, you know, I know I've told you this before, but I feel that the film was so powerfully cathartic for me. And what impressed me the most was the need to share this experience with people who haven't been there, who weren't there, gay and straight people. I was still online with a couple guys from the Central Valley who were in their 30s, and they were clueless. And it was so.
What do you mean they were clueless?
Well, they had no idea. You know, as David said, you know, they grew up way outside of that time, and they just didn't have an idea of what it was all about. They weren't from the area, and I felt actually glad being older and being able to share some time with them standing online about what that era was like.
I'm just
David,
curious.
Thank you.
I'm just curious if you happen to see them after the film. I know it's a big theater.
I did not, yeah. Unfortunately. It was quite an emotional scene after the film and very congested. So all I could do was just stumble onto the street and kind of go on my way. But congratulations, David, and I wish you great luck in Utah.
Thank you, Greg. I mean, one of the things that's been interesting is that people who did live through it are all sort of saying, how do we get young people to see it? And the young people who have seen it have all been saying, oh, I want all my friends to see it. So I'm not worried that we're going to, you know, be the old folks saying to the young folks, you got to see this movie, because I think there's a tremendous amount of interest in the younger generation, and that the younger men who have seen the sneak preview advanced versions of the film have come out of it with a very, very powerful desire to have their friends see it as well.
Why do you think that is? What do you think they get out of it? What impression does it have on them?
I think there's a sense of awe in a certain sense. I mean, I've had a couple of people just kind of burst out with a sense of pride of like, oh my God, I had no idea. I am so proud to be a part of this community. And also a sense of gratitude for what was done during those years to enable the kind of life that they're able to have now.
And to appreciate that.
And to appreciate that.
And the people whose shoulders they stand on, in a sense.
Yeah. And again, I think the sense of community is very inspiring. And I think that many people come out of it with a sense of wanting to become more involved and realizing just the beauty of what it can mean to be a part of a community.
Back to the phones now. Mark in San Francisco, you're on with David Weissman. Good morning.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. You're on. Go ahead.
So one of the things that happened to me during that time period, I didn't live in San Francisco, but I lived in Dallas. And between Thanksgiving of 1986 and Easter of 87, I actually went to 17 funerals for friends and people that I worked with. And it just changed my life in a way that it's beyond description. So,
why did you come to San Francisco?
When that happened to me in Dallas at the time, I moved away and I ended up moving to Wichita, Kansas. And I actually had a friend of mine that was shot and became a quadriplegic because he was gay. A friend of mine was beat up in Walmart parking lot, and it was so homophobic. And I just wanted to go to some place where I felt like I could be myself and I didn't have to live in fear. Mm. And so I moved to San Francisco 13 years ago.
And going through all those funerals and just the incredible grief, personal and community-wide, citywide, did it make you think, well, gee, maybe I shouldn't have come here, or I'm gonna leave and maybe I'll come back?
At the time, I left because it was so overwhelming that I felt like everybody that I knew was going to die. And I remember one of the things that I did every day when I opened up the newspaper, I would check the obituaries to see if somebody that I knew had died. And at the time, I'm 27 years old, and a friend of mine commented that she had never seen a 27-year-old man check the obituaries every single day.
Yeah, and David Weissman, I'm sorry, go ahead, yeah.
And I did want to get out of there. In retrospect, as horrible as it was, I think it made me appreciate life so much more than I would have if I hadn't experienced that. And I know that sounds sort of weird, but I think it made me a better man today than I possibly could have been. So I think I would rather have all my friends back, but I think out of something horrible, something positive did happen also.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for the call. David, I would imagine you hear that kind of thing from people who've seen the movie.
Yeah, I really appreciate your saying that. I do think that one of the things that people of that generation are feeling coming out of the film is a sense of validation and also a new appreciation of their own depth and beauty that comes from having lived through such a difficult period. I think that we who did go through all of that have a tremendous gift to offer to the world and to society in terms of our experience. I mean, we really changed the way society deals with death and dying in huge ways, and the way the medical system works, but mostly just in terms of the compassion that evolves out of a community struggle like that. And I think we do all have a lot to share, those of us who live through it.
It forced people to grow up a lot faster than they would
sure.
have. And to take on burdens that, you know, most people either never have to deal with or who do much later in their lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go back to the phones, and Chan is on the line in Berkeley. Chan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning. This is an important topic for film, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. I was a physician in training at the time in San Francisco and just wanted to share a few brief thoughts with you and one anecdote. It was indeed a very frightening time for us then. I was working in the clinical lab and was involved in ferrying patient samples back from lung lavages for diagnosis. And these young men were getting pneumocystis cranii, a very vicious opportunistic infection of the lungs. And it was scary. We had no idea what was causing the disease at that time. And as you mentioned earlier, this is a situation where I think compassion is required, and compassion for all concerned. I would show up at these lavage sessions in full surgical scrubs with a face mask on and a tube ready to take samples back to the lab to look at under a hermetically sealed hood. And, you know, I had an infant daughter at home at the time. We had no idea. There was fear that this might be an airborne infection. There was tremendous uncertainty. So I think we have to sort of exercise compassion for everyone involved in this process. We certainly were very frightened, no question about it. There were a lot of very courageous people involved in this whole process. And it was a lot of confrontation, too, quite understandable. I mean, even elements of paranoia in the gay community at the time, manifested by some of the protests that were going on, feelings that somehow the medical profession was purposely ignoring the disease, not working as hard as it could to discover its causes and treatments. One of these sessions I showed up was particularly upsetting for me. There was a young man on a gurney in his early 20s, I would say, not so different in age from myself, terrified. He obviously, this procedure had not been explained properly, clutching this large, large teddy bear and just bawling his eyes out. And I remember at the time being somewhat upset by this experience, and in a way upset at him for being so, or lack of a better word, unmanly. And I must say, in years since, looking back on this anecdote, I'm just terribly upset with myself for having had that reaction.
Well, on the other hand, you were there in the trenches and kind of overcame those things to a certain extent, despite the judgments you had.
Yeah. Well, I feel it was a very bad judgment, and one that I wouldn't have now at all. I would react completely differently. But, of course, my father and a lot older.
Yeah. David Weissman?
Yeah. First of all, I really, really appreciate your saying this in such a public context. One of the things that I'm hoping that the film will do will help all of us who have some degree of guilt about something from those years to give ourselves permission to have, you know, made mistakes or to have not risen to the occasion in ways that we ideally would have liked to. It was a very difficult time. You had an infant daughter. I mean, there was a tremendous amount of fear. And to the extent that we can sort of say, you know, nobody was perfect at the time and that there's never an end to the opportunities to do good things in the world, I really appreciate your willingness to speak that way, and thank you for the services that you provided in that time.
Chan, thanks for the call. There was that element in the film, too, of people expressing, you know, regret or, gee, I wish I could have done more, or I wish I had done this differently, as well as, you know, great heroics, you know, people taking care of their loved ones and their friends and strangers, for that matter.
Well, again, I think with the passage of time, there's many things that we look back on. I mean, I certainly can think back that there were probably people who died wondering why I wasn't there at the end. All of us who lived in the thick of it constantly had to make decisions who we got closer to as they got sicker and who we pulled away from because it was just too much. And this was a terrible dilemma to be faced with. And I hope that having an open dialogue around this step will help ease people's sense of shame or guilt around that and allow them to just realize it was very difficult and we all tried to do the best we could.
Let's go back to the phones now. Michael is calling from San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I would like to say to David, I saw the film at the film festival this year, and I would like to say thank you for producing such a wonderful, moving and loving film. Having lived through that era, I underscore everything that everybody's already been talking about, the tremendous amount of fear, the way things were handled by the media, that, you know, it got to a point where, and I think it was discussed in the film, that the BAR was having 2 to 3 pages of obituaries, and there were like 2 people being diagnosed and 1 person dying every day. And it just became overwhelming because the knowledge, or just the lack of knowledge of what was going on, was overwhelming at the time. And the community did come together. And there's a couple of things that struck me. I ended up in 2009 also being diagnosed, and of course that was a whole lot different than being diagnosed in 1980 or 1984, but I wanted to mention that I got the opportunity after the film, because you had that wonderful Q&A, to talk with Eileen.
And Eileen, who's the nurse in the film.
Yes, and what struck me, and this is from my own care in 2009, but also what she was describing, is that they were the unsung heroes of that time because of the fear. Because if you were diagnosed, it was a death sentence. You didn't get a chance to live. You didn't get a chance to fight. Some people died in a matter of weeks. Some people died in a year or so. But the unconditional love and caring and that came across that I just wanted to add that when I spoke with her after the film, we ended up weeping in each other's arms.
Hmm. Michael,
and
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish. Yeah, go ahead.
And it was so powerful. And so, first of all, congratulations that this is going to be shown at Sundance. And, of course, all the best wishes that you'll get the recognition that it so rightfully deserves.
Michael, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you. Yeah, we did show the film as a sneak preview. It wasn't quite finished yet at Frameline, and it is actually finished now. And I also do want to say that the film will be opening at the Castro at the end of February for a week, beginning on February 25th. So it will be playing here in San Francisco.
Do the people in the film, Eileen, for example, the nurse, I mean, they would never say I was a hero, of course, but do they feel, for the most part, do you think, proud of the role that they played or just the fact that they survived?
I think in some ways the film has given them an opportunity to look at their past in a way that they had not been given the opportunity before. And I think that it's been kind of a life-changing experience for everyone who is in the film. And I don't know that one looks back with a sense of heroism, but, you know, they're all like such lovely and beautiful and profound human beings. And, you know, heroism is a weird word. I mean, I think most people probably feel, well, we did the best we could. And, you know, all of them are shining examples of people rising to the occasion.
Do you worry at all that, you know, the film, of course, ends in the present where people, including one of the guys in the film, Daniel, is HIV positive but is living and doing well. Do you worry that people are going to forget about the epidemic because people are still being diagnosed, people are still dying?
Well, I mean, that's part of the reason to make the film to begin with. Actually, the finished version of the film, which is not what you saw, Scott, actually, one of the obituaries in the end of the film is actually from 4 weeks ago, an AIDS obituary from December of 2010. So we tried to be very clear in the film to remind people that this is ongoing, that people are still getting infected, and hopefully the sense of community evoked by the film will help encourage younger people and everybody to be more responsible in their sexual practices.
All right. David Weissman, film producer and director of We Were Here. It screens for the first time at Sundance this weekend, Saturday, and we'll be playing after that in San Francisco. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell with production assistance from Patricia Yallen and Christina Russo. Our intern is Suki Lewis. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. I'm Scott Schaefer, here for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.